Well, 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 Chandler.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here with you on this gorgeous day together as sisters in the sisterhood of life.
I mean, we're recording virtually, so I'm really just, you know, sitting in my office, dispatching across the airwaves to you, but it feels good to be here at least in MP3 or in audio format together.
It does feel good to be here, you know, together with you in MP3, Lauren.
That's really technically completely inaccurate, but let's just roll with it.
Let's just roll with it. You know, we're not audio engineers. We never pretended to be.
No, certainly not. If people listen to the sound quality of this podcast, they will know that immediately.
I know. It's like, what episode should we tell people to start on if they want to, like, listen to our podcast and not have their ears bleed? Like, start on what, episode 30?
Just never listen. Actually, most of our, like, not our best content, but some of our best content is for sure the early episodes,
right,
where we're telling, like, iconic childhood stories that we can only tell once, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And it was before we were properly set up audio-wise. It's truly unfortunate. But let's get positive. Let's talk about good news.
Good news. Do you have good news?
Do you have any?
I'm like, I hope you got something because I don't.
Tell me about your weekend.
Oh, so my weekend was amazing. I've had a lot of friends in town, and it was, like, a little bit tiring going all around town. Maybe this isn't interesting, but I think I'm bad at art and museums. Well, actually, I've always known this about myself, that I'm just not, like, super riveted when I go. Maybe that's awful. I think that actually is an awful trait about myself. But
it's just called not being cultured, not having, you know, appreciation for...
Are you telling me that when you go to a museum, you are completely riveted like you are when you sit in front of, you know, Below Deck Mediterranean?
Oftentimes, no, but I certainly will become, you know, verklempt.
Oh my gosh.
Depending on certain exhibitions, 100%. So do you not?
Well, I never feel that sensitivity?
Are you just dead inside?
I do. I have. I think I'm just not, like, I think I have to really get there. I really have to work to get to that place.
Mm.
And so for me, we went to, like, an exhibit, and I think it just took me a minute to get in that mode. It was also pretty hot, and my stomach wasn't great. So, yeah, I really have to be in, like, a perfect state of homeostasis in order to appreciate art, which is something really sad about me and shows my, you know, frail constitution.
I think when you talk about going to exhibits and art, it's just, like, it's so – it's just not specific enough. I mean, because so many exhibits these days are, like, it's like a toilet seat with, like, a feather boa in an empty room, and it's like some, like, you know, contemporary statement that makes no sense and is totally ineffable.
Right. Well, it's about, modern fertility.
Yes. It's a sophisticated rendering of the state of modern fertility that is beyond my understanding. But if you're standing in front of, like, Michelangelo's Pietà, you know, there's a difference there.
Right. I think so. It's something I want to get better at. So anyways, I think sometimes I feel, like, at a loss for how to react because I don't know. I don't understand the complexities or something. I don't know. This is very embarrassing for me to admit over the airwaves. Just so everyone knows, I'm being pretty vulnerable because I'd like to give off the impression that I at least, like, I'm somewhat cultured.
I don't think anyone's under that illusion. And I don't think that I don't think that there's any wool has been pulled over anyone's eyes, so to speak. And so I wouldn't worry about it. No worries. Can I tell you, speaking of art, do you remember when Alex McCord on season 2 of Roni or season 1 said that her and Simon, they don't buy art, they wear art? They spend their money on their clothes, which are art?
I don't remember that, but that's interesting because I don't remember her clothes being all that, you know, exhibit worthy.
I've been rewatching the early seasons of Real Housewives of New York. I highly recommend it. It's the most incredible entertainment. Kagan and I watched, like, 4 episodes together on Saturday.
Wow.
Kagan was riveted. He was like, this is excellent television. So
Kagan said the words, this is excellent television. Just making sure I have this right.
He might not. I think I said the words, this is excellent television, isn't it? And then I think he said, yes.
Okay, that's a little different for the record, but yeah.
I will just say that he wasn't even on his phone, like, 4 episodes straight. He's actually watching.
Amazing. That's huge.
And he just kept going on and on about Luann, which is hilarious. He's like,
he thinks she's really hot.
Oh yeah. He's like, she hasn't aged a day. oh, my girl Luann, she's back on the screen.
That is true. She actually has not aged it. She's only gotten better looking, I will say.
The finest of wines. But I do want to talk to you. Let's bring it back to wearable art. I sent you a picture this morning of a black dress. Okay?
Yeah, you did.
Mm-hmm. Can you please describe this dress to our listeners?
It's a midi dress. It's tight fitted. It's off the shoulder. And it has a big, I don't even know, shoulder
ruffle.
Fabric ruffle. Like both, like the whole top part is basically this huge shoulder ruffle.
It's very chic, I would say. Very like sculptural, avant-garde. It's really pretty. It's very distinctive. I would say it's a very modern dress, okay? And I thought that this was the perfect dress to wear in my engagement photo shoot with Kagan. He's going to be in a black suit. The vibe is very much like, I want it's it to upscale. Be like, it's Calvin Klein romance ad. That's my journey. That's my aesthetic goal.
Oh, I was gonna images. Say Black House White Market.
How dare you? I wanted something that's just a little bit more, it's a little bit more distinctive, okay, than a lot of the stuff I see out there. I wanted something just a little more elevated. Anyway, I showed him this dress after I'd already bought it, by the way.
Naturally, and sounds exactly like you. After I was like, just already ordered it in three different sizes.
I was like, just so you know, this is what I'm going to wear for our engagement shoot. And he was like, you're kidding. It's like, you're kidding. I'm like, no, this is what I'm wearing. He was like, I wouldn't say angry, but he was like, no, you're not going to wear that. Like, absolutely not. That's ridiculous. It's like one of the most overtop things I've ever seen. He was like, he's like, no, like he kind of got heated over it. Like, that's how much he hates his dress.
You are talking to the guy who wants you in Billabong graphic tees and cutoffs.
No, I know. And
let's remember where we are.
I know, but still, it's like, so then he's like, all right, fine. If you wear that, I'm wearing a top hat.
Oh my gosh.
And he basically said he's going to come dressed as Abraham Lincoln if I wear this outfit, which I told him, I was like, hello, like what I have is could be in the pages of Vogue in 2021.
Right.
A top hat? No. You can wear anything in the pages of Vogue in 2021. You are not allowed to wear a top hat to engage in photos. And that's
no offense to Kagan, but he has maybe one of the most elementary understandings of fashion that I've ever seen, and with my naked eyes, frankly. Okay.
Ever witnessed. It's just so funny. And so it's truly become like a domestic dispute.
Oh my gosh.
Apparently I'm not allowed to wear this. And so I'm very disappointed. And the saga continues, honestly. I mean, this is so incredibly, like, light under a bushel does not even come close.
I just don't understand why he has no fashion sense whatsoever. I'm really just laying into him. Like, Kagan, I say this with all due respect. No fashion sense whatsoever. And so the fact that he would try to limit your fashion sense because he has none is just a truly serious sin. And maybe should give you pause about, you know, being yoked
upcoming
with this person.
Upcoming nuptials. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. He just doesn't like distinctive fashion because I think he thinks it's like ostentatious. And it's basically like being like, oh, I'm so special. Everyone needs to look at me. Like that's how he thinks of.
Well, that's the difference between people like him and people like me.
Yeah. And it's like, exactly. I am so special. Of course.
Everyone should look at me. Also, this is your wedding. It's not like this is something you're going to wear to like, you know, a beach party.
Exactly. It's not like I'd be wearing this to like Golden Spoon on a Monday afternoon with his friends. Like this is going to be very much appropriate for the occasion.
Yeah.
But no.
I mean, it's just funny because I do feel like Ben always wants me to dress a little bit more. He always wants me to dress a little bit classier, I think.
Oh, really? Like he wants you to be a little bit more formal.
Formal feels like the wrong word, but I feel like he is just a little bit more like classy, slightly more preppy, like taste. For me.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's an East Coast versus West Coast sensibility. Like Kagan likes a West Coast casual, eating a burrito on the side of the road in a surf town vibe. And I like a Hamptons party on a
where exactly on the East Coast have you lived?
No, I'm just saying for the vibe that I'm going for, it's Hamptons party at dusk.
Right.
Black tie. That's the vibe I like.
Yeah. Also, your wedding is going to be black tie. You have to like set that tone with your engagements.
I don't want to wear a dress that I feel like is like I could wear other times. Like I want it to be special. Yeah. I want it to be distinctive. I want my grandkids to be like, oh my gosh, isn't grandma an icon? Okay. Right. And Kagan wants our grandchildren to be like, did grandma have a job or a home when they took these photos?
Was she like in between summer camps when she took these photos?
Exactly. Exactly. It's very unfortunate. So anyway, the saga continues.
Okay. Well, keep me posted. Let me know if you need this to crash or something.
Thank you. I will. Mm-hmm. It's not off the table.
Kagan, if you're listening, I meant everything I said, but still welcome to the family.
Okay. We need to discuss. We have an amazing interview today with David Yontef, the host of Behind the Velvet Rope podcast. He's had you guys like Luann. I mean, he's literally had
every single
housewife on his pod. Yes, yeah. His podcast is a big deal. We really lucked out getting him on. And so if you are into all things Bravo, you will love this interview because he spills the tea. And we talk about Heather Dubrow. We talk about Erica Jane. We really get into it. It's a really fun interview. And you can hear about behind the scenes of actually being friends with these people and what that is like. So it's a really fun interview. And if you don't watch any Bravo, honestly, it's probably not the interview for you. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah, but it's right, a great
I have no deep idea dive. What we're talking about.
It's a great deep dive, and David has like very hot takes and lots of juicy things to share. So, very good,
totally
worth a listen.
Yes, and with that, we'll cut to the interview. Well, 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 we are joined today by tell me if I'm pronouncing this correctly, David Yontef of the Behind the Velvet Rope podcast. David, thank you so much for coming on the show. I don't know who, you know, swindled you into this appearance, but we are grateful for that magician wherever they are.
Well, thank you for having me.
So happy you're here with us. David, one of the things that I love about your podcast is that you have essentially everyone in the business, or at least in the reality TV business, on your podcast. Like the pedigree of clients. I think I read this in our email exchanges, but we are like sharing rarefied airspace right now because you have talked to literally everyone. So, and you put out episodes 5 days a week, which is just beyond impressive.
Well, you're too kind, Lauren. But yeah, I mean, I've had a moment, right? I've kind of had a moment, and everyone seems to want to come on and chat these days, which I'm not arguing about.
I want to take it back to the beginning. Let's go to your Genesis story. You were originally an attorney, and you left your career in law and ended up as a, you know, really pop culture podcaster. So please, can you share that journey for us?
I mean, there were a few steps in between, but yes, I did used to practice corporate tax law. I always say, like, I'm a closet smart person. I just don't really want to talk about anything smart. You know, absolutely. I just want to talk about, you know, I don't need, you listen, you know, it's like when they say, you know, look at all these housewives that talk about all the money they have. And if you scratch the surface, there's no money. Like people that really are rich don't talk about it. So I'm smart. Okay. I don't need to prove I'm smart. I don't need to, like, I can sit around and listen to people have an intelligent conversation. I'm not interested. Sorry, been there, done that. You know, I practice law. I'm a CPA. I just, whatever, no interest. So there were a few steps in there. Like I went into recruiting and I had my own recruiting company and I ran HR at a bunch of companies. I actually worked for Martha Stewart.
Oh, well,
running her HR department. So I worked for a bunch of companies doing HR and recruiting, and then like all the companies kept merging. And then when my last company merged, I was just like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I want to take a moment out. You know, and I started like hanging out with these reality TV people. Now, I was always a fan of reality TV right from the beginning, like The Simple Life, The Hills, Laguna Beach. That was all my jam. And anything really pop culture, like growing up, like 90210, Melrose Place. So it's no shock that, I mean, that was me. I loved pop culture. So when I started hanging out with all of these reality TV folks, and listen, it's not that hard. I mean, we're not talking, this is not Beyonce. It's not, you know, Rihanna and Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
They are accessible. And yes, it does help that I live in New York City and I have all this stuff in my backyard. Right. You know, I just was like, this has to be some type of business. Like, the more I didn't work, the more I was like, I don't think I'm done working in my life. Like, I need to do something. And that's really where the name Behind the Velvet Rope comes from my podcast. Like, when I started my podcast, it really was 2 days a week. One day was going to be an interview and one day was going to be a story. Like, my pilot episode is a story about me in Florida having a dinner with Dolores Catania, Rick Leventhal, Kelly Dodd, and Ramona Singer.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And like, this dinner is exactly what, right. Like, oh my gosh, like exactly what you're thinking is pretty much how the dinner was. Ramona is literally seated, has the whole branzino cut open and is on her second martini before any of us even sit down. Dolores, right. Like, Dolores probably didn't necessarily want to sit next to Ramona. Kelly and Rick are in their own world. And I'm like, right. Exactly what you think is happening is what's happening. And I'm like, you know, this is how it's almost like when you're a child of a celebrity, like at some point you realize like, okay, my life is not like the others, but mm-hmm. you don't realize that for a while because like, it's your life. Like, you don't think it's anything wonderful and special. So that was kind of the genesis for my podcast. I was like, these things, these like stories, this existence, which is kind of like my everyday, I think like the outside world, like not even like with an ego, like people might find this stuff interesting. And that's really where like the name behind the Velvet Rope came from. I'm like, I don't necessarily find. Yeah. And it's like, I don't really find this so interesting. I mean, it's fun because I'm having my second martini myself, but like these little nuances of what I'm sitting here watching, like there's no filming. It's like, I think this is like these little stories people would probably find interesting. And then that's when I put out my first episode and I'm like, oh, I guess people do find this interesting. That's kind of the genesis of how it started. And then, right. And then COVID hit. And then that's when I was like, I couldn't keep up with content. And then I really went from like 2 days a week to 3 days a week to 4 days a week. And now it has turned into like the 5 day a week. No more stories. Those are on my Patreon, not a shameless plug for my Patreon, but it's more like, if you want to hear a story, there it is. And it's really turned into like a 5 day a week interview podcast, which is like, I am now like a journalist. It's not about mm-hmm. me. Like, I don't talk about myself on my show. You know, I might interject a little something, but it's really like, I'm coming to interview these people and get the tea for the listeners. It's turned into a whole different thing.
I think what's so interesting, so you were already friends with these people. And I also know that you, I don't know if this is still happening, but at one point you were planning on writing a book on how to become friends with reality stars. Is that still in the works?
Well, let me put it this way. The book itself is technically written.
Okay.
It's written. Like, if I can just find somebody to handle it and take it over, or I can find 5 minutes in my day, it's something that I want to come back to. I probably have to now go back in and, you know, change a few things and update a few things. But the book is written. I mean, there's no buts about it. Like, yeah, I think it needs some edits, but there is a book just sitting there, basically. Yes.
Can you reveal, and you don't have to give everything away, but the brass tacks for our listeners who are social climbers, who, you know, are the Alex McCords in the room and who would like to become friends with some D-listers, maybe even more, maybe even above that, what your advice is?
I mean, listen, we love the Alex McCords in the room. I really should just self-publish this damn book and put it out. And like,
you really should.
You know, I mean, I can sell copies. I mean, come on now. But yeah, I mean, I would say start on the D-list. That's like a good place to start. You know, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with the D-list. Listen.
Start small.
Yeah, start small. And you have to be like persistent and don't spread yourself too thin. Like, you need to pick, say, 1 to 3 targets maybe. And look, it is organic, right? Like, you're not going to just be able to, like, to become friends with everyone. Like, it is organic. Like, someone does have to like you, you know? Right. So everyone says to me now, like, oh my God, like all your friends are like on TV. But I'm like, that's just because I'm a workaholic. Like, and so, I mean, that's what I do all day. So yeah, it makes sense that all my friends are in this reality space now because I work all the time. But to get there, I would start on the D list and like, I would just, well, there's 2 ways to do it, but I really think you need to put yourself in harm's way, so to speak. Like, yeah. You need to, listen, this is not, it's 2021. Like, you can find where someone's going to be every day, all day, if you really want to.
So,
you know, right. Like, if,
yes, that's so true. Oh my gosh. Honestly, literally stalk people.
We're literally in the yes. world of Dumois, you know, like stay up on Dumois, see where the celebrities are going to be, and then go there immediately.
Yeah, go there immediately. And like, yeah, you know, some people could say, well, this is stalking, but you know, you're achieving a goal. So right. you can't, you gotta just like, this is just how I ran all my businesses. It's how I run my podcast. I'm like a Bethany Frankel when it comes to work. Like, I don't care how we get there, just get there. So the end result is, who cares if people are saying you're stalked or whatever, you just gotta go for it. And pick a few people and just listen. The more you show up somewhere, and it's an organic thing. You're not going to talk to someone and they're not just going to say, I like you. The 10th time someone speaks to you, they just are like, yeah, I kind of know you now. And then it just kind of happens.
The 10th you know, time you're girl, outside their house, they're going to say they know exactly, you.
Exactly. That girl shows up in every place I imagine. She's always lurking in the corner. That girl with that shitty Madewell bag that looks like, you know, it's from 10 years ago. She's always in the corner lurking. I mean, this is so organic. I need to be her friend.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, what's the word? It's like a structured, organic relationship. Right. But you do then, I mean, yeah, it starts one way, but you do cross over to the other side. And then like for me, eventually, and this is all in the book too, it's a whole trajectory of like, wait a second, be careful what you wish for. Like, hey, I don't like you. Like, I'm glad you're my friend, housewife mm-hmm. number three. I don't like you. So I'm going to move on from you. So it's right. like, this is in the book too. It's like when you, it's listen, it's a lot of chapters. Like eventually you get to the like, yeah, I'm not so sure I'm interested in you either.
Do you ever find that people, I mean, I find this a lot of the time, people think of podcasting as a hobby and you're like, oh no, this is a job, honey. Like, this is a full job.
Totally. And like when people ask me what I do, I literally say I'm the host of a successful podcast mm-hmm. and they laugh and I'm like, no, I'm not. There's no ego. I'm just explaining that like, if I tell you that this is what I do, you're going to look at me like I'm like starving in the street.
Uh-huh. Right, uh-huh. right.
Yes, everyone looks at it as a hobby and laughs and is like, oh, that's cute.
How fun. I'm like, oh,
it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. Well, speaking of someone who's not starving in the street, Heather Dubrow, I'm really dying as to your thoughts on Heather Dubrow. I know you've had her and Terry on your podcast. We are huge fans of Heather and very curious, though, as to your thoughts on her coming back, what you think of her in general. And also want to know where you think the Dubrow fortune comes from. So please, well, wherever you want to start.
I mean, yes, look, the stars aligned and I got to have Heather and Terry on the podcast. That is the interview that keeps giving because there have been 8,000 new articles written in the past literally week about Heather coming back and she started filming and it has nothing to do with me. This is also like what I've learned about the media and in the article it says, Heather said, I'm behind the velvet rope with David Yontef, never say never. She said it other places, but somehow my podcast has gotten the, so every time Heather is now like this whole resurgence, it's like a whole new wave of press. And I mean like People Magazine, it's just like, you're doing nothing and you're like, the Google alerts is going off and you're like, this is how it works. Like, this is the interview that just keeps giving. I haven't spoken to Heather and Terry in like a year. I get it. There's nobody to me that they could have brought back from the OC past that would change the show as much as Heather. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. she just, it's like you joke and Tamara says fancy pants, but it's true. Heather elevates this show, period. She does. She's right. not, she's in a different level. If she is.
Right.
It's that simple. I mean, she's I have a lot of
echelon,
thoughts.
For sure. Go ahead.
I mean, well, and then I think, and this is just me. This is not me like with my inside information behind the velvet. This is just the way I think. I think that A, she got at least $1 million to come back. I do. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't need the money. So right. I think that she got, they're like, we need you. Obviously, she's made it very clear she'll never work with Kelly Dodd. I think that I'm not so sure Kelly would have had a job anyway, but I think that was like, okay, done. Like, I think this is how the conversation went. Okay, you want Kelly gone, done. You want, you know, six figures, done. Like, what else do you want? I think, and I, there's nothing, nobody has, there's no reason that I should think this. I think that she might have had a, like, you know, Bronwyn is not my cup of tea. Like, you can get rid of her too.
Oh, really?
It's just the way I think. Listen, I don't think Bronwyn would have necessarily had a job. So it's like, I just think, yeah, like, it's things that would have happened anyway, but I don't know if, I can't see Heather wanting to film with Bronwyn. That's my own analysis. Nobody has ever said that. I've never read it. I don't hear, I just, that's how I think.
I kind of feel like Heather is like the West Coast Bethany to some degree.
I've said that so many times. You know, I think she is.
Like, she's kind of pulling the strings a little bit. She has Andy's ear or whoever.
And not for nothing. I mean, the production company is Evolution, and that's botched. So
interesting.
I'm not, like, listen, I don't think entertainment is based on favors. Like, I don't, just, that's not how it works. But I mean, I don't think it hurts. Like, I just think it was an easy, like, you want to come back? Like, I mean, okay, we'll like make the call to Andy. You know what I mean? It's like Evolution, botched is huge. It's a, I mean, Terry's like a huge thing. And it's, Ian is like, it's a related network. I mean, I'm not saying that's why she's back. I don't, I mean, I think if you're not right for the show, they don't care if your husband is the most successful, but it's just a very easy transition. But I agree. I think that she is like the West Coast Bethany and that she doesn't need the show. If Heather goes back and is not happy, she will quit. It's very simple. There's like, how many people can say, like, Kathy Hilton, Bethany, you don't need the fame and you don't need the money. A and B, you don't need either. You have both. So okay, that's why it's great. You know,
like, where does this Dubrow level of wealth come from? Because, like, okay, it's one thing to be a plastic surgeon, to do a bunch of boob jobs, but that doesn't really get you this huge mansion on the hill, flying in private jets, building a basically another resort in Idaho. We're a little bit baffled because knowing that reality, you know, $1 million a year is great. It doesn't get you to where Heather and Terry are. And so is Bosch providing the gravy train? Is QVC providing the gravy train? Are they like
is it Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig?
Like spending every dime they have and maybe, you know, stealing from Peter to pay Paul. Please uncover this for us.
I don't know. I always just, because I talk about money with housewives all the time on my Patreon. I always just thought Heather and Terry, like, it's weird as I question, I think that 99% of the housewives we see do not have a pot to piss in. When you listen, if you live in a $7 million house and, you know, you haven't paid your mortgage, then to me, you're broke. Like, it's just that simple. So I do think like the Dorits and the PKs of the world are broke as a joke. I don't care if your outfit costs $15,000. I don't buy it. Right. I've always just thought Heather and Terry were the real deal and had, I mean, you don't think like but a top plastic surgeon that's booked. And look, I mean, I grew up upper middle class. So it's not like I'm like, oh my God, like I think like, you know, a dollar is like $1 million. But I don't know. You, I mean, can't you get it if you're a top plastic surgeon? Like, we're not talking like Jennifer Aiden's husband. We're talking like wait list. I mean, Terry was really like, look at Paul Nassif. Like even before botched, like they have money. I mean, a top surgeon. Now you don't think so? And I mean, but like I the books Paul and Nassif- the products.
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought most of Paul Nassif's wealth before, you know, came from Adrian Maloof's like family estate. So, and then you know, I assumed that that divorce was probably a good financial situation for him. I don't know.
I think what's interesting about Heather Dubrow's wealth is that it's almost like Beverly Hills wealth in Orange County, because most of the Orange County housewives live in like suburban tract homes that are like nice, but they're more like, you know, the $2 to $4 million range. Yeah, totally. Versus like, you know, she's literally living in a sprawling the mall, you know, mansion in, in Newport Beach. And so it does, it feels like Beverly Hills wealth in Orange County to me, which is it like a little funky. Like,
no, it feels like that. And, you know, even like when Heather posts, I mean, she's post, you know, she, her closet and I mean, it's, her outfits are like Dorit. It's like, if you really look, it's like Louis Vuitton shoes. And now I see a Louis Vuitton ring and I see a Cartier and I see like a bag. Oh, wait, that's an Hermes bag. And like, then she's taking a picture of her closet. I'm like, okay, so I'm noticing behind her, I see over there, there's like 17 Birkins. And so like, it's there's a lot going on.
And it's like, it's all the accoutrements. Like it's like flying private, going to the private suite beforehand, you know, like every possible way to enhance one's life with wealth, yeah. I feel like they are doing. And so I guess that's where for me, I'm just so baffled because even plastic surgery, plastic surgeon, top plastic surgeon plus reality star on E!, I don't know. It doesn't add up to that, but maybe I just don't understand those numbers, which is totally possible.
To add to our theory from before, like I'm sure her and Terry hustle. They do QVC. Like I feel like there's a lot of like money-making strategies that they have underneath the surface or that are just not quite as public-facing.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's like, I mean, I've never heard of either of them having family money. I know Terry's. I mean, I don't know, but I never really questioned it. So I don't know. Now you're making me think, like, I don't know. I just, you know how you just get a feeling, like, you just have that feeling about PK and Dorit. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just, that doesn't add up to me.
Right.
I never got that about the Dubrows, really.
I mean, there's something about Dorit and PK where it's like, does their house have enough furniture? Like, is it actually decorated well? You know, it all feels like it's staged. For that moment.
Right. That's like Jennifer Aiden's house that I've been in a million times. Like, it's like the walls are like sheetrock and mm-hmm. it's like there's no furniture anywhere. Like, so yeah. I don't know. I've never really thought about them as anything but legitimate, the Dubrows. That's just me.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's a lot. I mean, it's no joke. It's a lot of money. It is.
It's a lot of money. It's private chef. It's driver. You know, when she went to do her podcast, she'd always have her driver Pete. You know, anyway, it's always been a mystery to me. I think there's more to uncover there. So if you're a listener and you also are Heather Dubrow's accountant, please slide into our DMs. Maybe mm-hmm. come on the pod.
And I mean, not for nothing, you have four kids, so that ain't cheap. Yes, like, it's not like you have one child. You have four freaking children.
Right. Okay, adjacent question. You touched on that she probably didn't want to work with Bronwyn. That's a theory. No hard facts. Do you agree with Kelly Dodd's accusation that Bronwyn's entire storyline is fake, that she wasn't actually an alcoholic and that she's not actually a lesbian?
Well, I just had Elizabeth Vargas on my show too. Mm-hmm. Which everyone should listen to, whether you liked Elizabeth or not on the actual show. I mean, listen, it doesn't seem like, okay, Bronwyn has said, I mean, in the media, it's not even like she said things like fame is addicting and I'm addicted to fame. And first of all, who says that, whether it's true or not? But yeah, I don't really buy it. And I don't know if you, like, her and Sean just had a Facebook live. It's almost like at some point you're going to be like, who the fuck cares? Like, right, we don't need to hold like a press conference, but because there's no other media that really wants to do this and speak to you. So Bronwyn and Sean held a press conference this week that she's moving to Hawaii and, you know, they're taking, I'm like, you don't need to announce this to the world. Right. Nobody cares. Like, you already have this marriage that isn't traditional. Like, look, I'm all for like a non-traditional marriage and whatever. But yeah, I personally think it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, it really is. Were you happy or were you pleased that Kelly was fired? Because I do think that the most interesting thing to watch on the show last season was Kelly Dodd. Whether you agree with her or not, or think she's problematic or not. So I'm curious, that aside, are you happy she's done or will you miss her and Rick, you know, canoodling on screen?
I almost am down the middle on this because the thing is, like, I have no problem with Kelly or Rick. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't mind her as much as so many people mm-hmm. did. Like, she's not as polarizing for me. I did think that she, like, I think that's why, like, Dorinda is gone. Like, I think, and this is why I think Shannon should have been gone. Like, I think when you're the same person and there's no change, then we know what we're going to get from you always, then I think it's time to go.
It's a one-trick pony type of thing. I mean, Sonia to me is that way.
Yes, I have a lot to say about Sonia Morgan. I think she's gotten a free pass for like 5 years because of Ramona, but that's a whole, we can get into that. But so I like don't hate Kelly. I'm not like incensed because of her like stances and statements. Like, I don't even think personally that had any, I think maybe it had a tiny bit to do with it, but I don't think that we're Bravo when he fired Kelly Dodd because of a Drunk Wives Matter hat and everything. I don't. I mean, I think that's good optics for Bravo, and we can let people think that. I think the main reason she's fired, I think, is Heather. And I think she, like, it doesn't help her case that she was doing all this stuff and had these speeches on COVID. I think that's part of it. And I think it's like her storyline has kind of run. Like, mm-hmm. Kelly would have steamrolled over everyone next season. It would have been the same Kelly. So, mm-hmm. I mean, she'll never change. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, like, that's when it's like, we know you. We know everything you're about, love you or hate you, but now there's nothing that's going to change it. It's time to go.
Right. I think you could say that about a lot of housewives. Like, you know, we kind of know what we're going to get from you. Like, I think that you could even say that about a Kyle Richards, but I do think that Kyle Richards, in spite of the stability of her character and storyline, is still an excellent housewife who's very compelling television.
Yeah, but I think the difference is like Kyle to me is like Luann. Like, they blend. Like, Kyle exactly. can go blend and Luann can blend. Kelly, Dorinda don't blend. They overtake
the
situation. Right. Like, in like almost like suck the air out of the room. And I like Kelly. I do not like Dorinda in any way, in any shape or any form.
Okay, interesting.
And I know that now everyone listening is going to say, well, like, doesn't Ramona do the same? But it is different. Like, there's a way to do it that has a humorous edge to it versus like just overpowering so people are truly afraid of you.
Yeah.
Like, I do think there's people that in a scene or just were afraid of like a Dorinda or it comes off like too harsh.
Like, Ramona bounces back. I don't like Kelly.
I really don't mm-hmm. not like her. I just think it would have been more of the same. Like, she would have overpowered, and it's almost like, I don't think Heather would have been afraid of her. It's just that dynamic would have been too overpowering for the whole show. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, totally. Can you please get into your feelings on Dorinda? One Dorinda medley.
Well, I mean, as a human being, I have said this before too. Like, I don't ever have teams based on the show. Like, I can separate my personal feelings versus like what I watch on the show. As a human being, I have had interactions with Dorinda, and I mean, they have never been pleasant. Like, the nasty Dorinda you see on TV, I think, is the nasty Dorinda that has existed in the world. And she has people that she's had in her life for a long time. So, but you know, I mean, she doesn't think much of me either, and she's been rude to me. And I mean, I'm not here for it. Like,
oh my gosh,
I think Dorinda's one of those, like other people, that just think she's better than us because she's on TV. And it's like, girl, I don't want your life because you're miserable.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't change places with you ever.
She does strike me as a deeply unhappy person.
Yeah. And so I just feel like, no, you're not the golden standard just because you're on a show that you were fired from or quit, whatever you want to say. I mean, you can spin that any way you want. You left on your own. Who cares?
Yeah.
But you're miserable. Yeah. And don't tell me you're not a miserable human being when you put your head down at the end of the day and nobody wants to be you.
Did you have any interactions with John that were positive or negative?
Did you get your dry cleaning done by him? As a New Yorker.
If John's dry cleaning was near where I lived, I would get my dry cleaning done by him. I've had no bad interactions with John. I thought he was kind of I know there's lots of rumors out there on so many levels, but I never had anything bad with John. He was kind of like a happy-go-lucky guy every time I saw him.
Okay. Love to hear it.
You know? Okay.
Let's hard left turn pivot. I'm dying for your thoughts on Erica Jayne. I really want to make sure we touch on this. I I don't know if you've watched the most recent episode that came out last night. I watched it this morning, and I'm so curious as to how you feel currently. I know your feelings have shifted a lot on Erica, and you've gone back and forth. So what is the current, you know, state of the union on your thoughts on Erica and her complicity or naivete when it comes to the lawsuits?
Well, I didn't watch the latest episode.
Okay.
Yet. I have gone back and forth. This, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I have my own theory, and I still am not convinced that it's not true. I still believe that it is possible that Erica came home one night and the lights were out, and she put the lights on, and Tiago ran over to her, and she pet the dog, and she went into the other room, and that big dining room table that we've seen dinner parties at, she turned on the lights, and sitting in the dark was Tom, whole bottle of wine drank, and she's like, what are you doing? Because he's just sitting there in the dark, and he's like, sit down, and she's like, you're scaring me, and he's like, sit down, and then he tells her this whole thing, and is like, this is what we're going to do. And she's like, well, you're the smartest lawyer I know, which I've said many times. So tell me. And he's like, you're going to, in 2 days, you're going to pick, you know, whatever news outlet you want. And you're going to make a statement that you are divorcing me and you're going to leave. And there's going to be no burner phones and we are never going to speak again. And like, I think, I still think there's a possibility that Tom laid all this out and said, this is what you need to do. Because like, the thing is, if something bad is coming for you and then it doesn't come and you're like, oh, well, now it's 9 months later, you think like now it's gone. So I think that this was looming. And then every time it was going to maybe surface, Tom was like, oh, it's not time yet. So like, I think that this plan, this is what I think, that I think he set a plan in place. And if they were a year ahead of it, it would have worked. She would have gotten a divorce, gotten money. You know, who knows then? Like, if you get a divorce and you have all the money and like 2 years later, it comes out that there's this victims and like you're not tied to this man, it could have worked. This is what I think. And so that makes me think she didn't know anything. And that Tom is like, I'm 81. And yes, you could live to 100. You could live 20 more years. But I think it's his last act of love for Erica. Like, I am going to fall on the sword for you. I think that. And I'm not like a huge Eric, like, let me stick up for Eric. I just think there is a world in which that happened. And the only reason I could think that is like, it's not like your husband made $50,000 and you were living like you made $1 million or $100,000. And it's like there was so much money there in the beginning that what's the difference? Whether there's five private jets or three, like it's, I don't think you really start to question every dollar at a certain level. So it's not like your husband is like, you know, makes $150,000 and you have three private jets and your outfits cost, you know, $100,000. It's just, I don't know. Right. I'm not sticking up for Erica. She could have known. I'm not convinced of it.
Yeah. And I mean, and the only, oh, go ahead.
Well, in the scenario you're painting up, the vivid picture that you painted for us, thank you. She knows what's happened, or she finds out what's happened, and then he lays out the plan for her to like escape.
Yes.
Okay. And part of that escape is her just vilifying him on the show, is, you know, painting him as this person who did all these things wrong, which is, you know, probably true.
Yeah, I think it's right. So, I mean, I guess, does that make it any better? Because at some point she knows and she hasn't rectified the situation, I guess, is what we're saying.
But I have two minds here. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and maybe she knew. Maybe she knew. I just don't know.
She is smart enough to not be taking victims' money and then making songs like It's Expensive to Be Me and flagrantly flaunting wealth. That to me just seems like she's just too smart to do that. Whether she's a sociopath and willing to do it or not is not, you know, I don't know. So I would say that there's a part of me that thinks she didn't know. And that, like you said, like, you know, one private jet, three private jets, you know, she didn't really realize that the level of wealth they were at wasn't realistic for what he did. And she was in the dark. But then I think her behavior post, you know, all the narcissistic Instagram posts and the no mention of the victims, you would think that if she didn't know and then she found out and the plan was to vilify Tom, that there would have been this great public reckoning, right? Where maybe everything would have been deleted except for show promos, and we would have only seen a very contrite Erica Jane. And even on the show, she wouldn't be highlighting her own suffering about the fact that she's only in a $2.2 million house now, you know, this humble bungalow that's like actually really cute. She would actually be just talking about the victims and how horrible it is and how she's going to cooperate and do whatever she can. Like, to me, the attitude of someone who is innocent is one of, okay, I'm going to do whatever I can to help this investigation because this is terrible. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, if it was really a plan, there would be no Instagram posts or... But at the same time, right. I mean, the other thing is, when you're really innocent, you do the things, some of the things she's done. Do you see what I'm saying?
You make those mistakes. Like, it's less calculated. You'd be like,
yeah, well, you'd be like, I don't give a fuck. I'll post anything on my Instagram because I'm innocent. And the truth always comes out, so... You're going to talk about me for the next 4 years, but I'm going to do whatever I want because eventually the truth will come out. Like, I have nothing to worry about. Why wouldn't I post and sing about it's expensive to be me? This isn't my problem. It's my husband did this. What do I care? Like, don't chastise me for what this man did.
Do you know if she has, if there's the potential that she could actually go to jail or prison?
I mean, I had a bunch of lawyers on my Patreon, and I forgot what they said, as crazy as that sounds, just because we also talked about Jen Shaw, and I was just like, that was the... I don't know. I'm going to have people back on, because there seems to be so many developments in this case. I'm going to have to figure out where we go from here.
Well, okay, pivoting to New York, unless there's anything else on Beverly Hills that you want to talk about.
No, I think that's good. I mean, Kathy Hilton is killing it, and I do love her like everybody else does.
Okay, tell us, your thoughts on Crystal before we move on.
I think that as the audience, we just know right away, yes or no. You know, now you can change. Like, I think Leo was an instant yes, and now we can talk.
Yeah.
And like a Tiffany Moon is an instant yes. And then you have these other people that are like, I don't think Crystal's going to go very far. I don't think she's in it. I don't think it's going to work.
Oh, really? Why?
To me, she's just very unlikable.
There's nothing there, you know? I mean, tell me why she's going to last when like a Joyce Girard didn't, or a Carlton, or, you know, even Eileen Davidson, I love.
Yes. But, oh my gosh.
It was obvious that she wasn't going to be, you know, like the long term. It's just Crystal's, she's not going to make it.
See,
might make it a second season. She's not going to make it.
I loved Eileen for her neutrality, for like her way of blending in. But Crystal, to me, just the way she's doubling down on this violating thing is just, I don't know, it's so unlikable. And it just, I don't think it connects her to the audience at all.
Yeah. And I just don't think, and like, even if this is a storyline and she comes back, like, what's the long-term plan?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, Crystal, I just don't see it. Like, I just don't see her being a housewife.
Yeah. I mean, that she's definitely one where it seems like the money is legit and she doesn't need it either way. So she's probably not going to stoop to super desperate levels like a Bronwyn to try to, to try to keep her place. She's just going to try to stay on by talking about, you know, the fact that she like eats brownies or whatever with her housekeeper and like works out in her backyard.
And she doesn't have like the charm of a Kathy Hilton.
Yeah, and I don't think she's going to get downright crazy. You know what I mean? Like, when push comes to shove, right? Like, I don't think she will do anything to stay on. And so, yeah. I mean, like, the thing about doing anything to stay on is, like, you need to be good at it. You know, like, I think, like, personally, like, I think, like, a Candace Dillard is great at it, personally. Mm-hmm. Like, someone like that, where, like, you don't know if this is them or if they're in on the joke and they know what they're doing. Like, a Kenya Moore, like at the reunion, everyone's like, why did you care? Why did you make such a big deal out of who Bolo slept with? And Kenya's like, well, that's my job. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, it is. Like, Kenya Moore is a freaking genius. Like, she does it. She knows what to do and it's natural.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't think she's doing it Like, she is doing it just because of the show, but you don't really think that, and it's not a Bronwyn just wasn't good at it. That's the bottom line.
Do you think Bronwyn Ramona is good, like, is good at it?
Yeah. I think she's great at it.
Yeah.
I think she's phenomenal at it. Phenomenal.
So give us your thoughts on Ramona in general as a housewife, because it was, you know, rumored earlier this week that she was fired. So very curious as to what you think.
Well, and then, you know, the other rumor is that, you know, people are implying that, like, Leah put this out to the press. Then I saw that, like, someone said Dorinda put this out to the press and Leah together. I mean, Dorinda and Leah are friends, I can tell you that.
Right.
I think that Ramona, first of all, I think that, let me say, with five housewives, I actually think no one is going to be fired, and I think they're just going to add somebody. That's what I think.
Really? They're going to keep Sonia too.
Well, I did think that. I mean, now I'm like, because the ratings are so low, and you know, they moved the reunion. They are not filming the reunion for an extra month now. Do you know this?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Google it. Like, whatever they were going to film the reunion, it's delayed. They're literally delaying it. I don't know if they're going to go back and try to change editing for the rest of the season. Yeah. They might. But because of that, they might try to shake things up. I think that Ramona is going nowhere next season. And I think that Ramona knows how it works. And I think that, I mean, like, if you look at, like, the way Ramona handled Elise, who I'm friends with, like, she had to deal with it for the season. But Ramona was just like, it doesn't matter because Elise will never be back after the season. Like, just let it play out. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, I think Ramona really understands how it works.
Yeah.
And so I do not think Ramona is going anywhere at all. I think that, you know, the rumor is that Andy said, I've never seen a housewife have such a fall from grace when he was speaking about Leah this week. I don't know if that's true. That is the rumor that Andy said that. I don't know if that's really true.
Because people are turning on Leah.
I think people have officially turned on Leah, right?
Because what? Like, she's seems to be like trying to just cancel her castmates and like turn the show into, or what? Like, what do you think?
I don't know. I think that I've seen that a lot of people, I mean, and I've seen nothing positive about Leah online personally. Like, okay, if you can show me something, I mean,
in the beginning season, it was.
Oh, yeah. In the beginning it was all, but I don't know. Or are people accusing Leah of being like a Bronwyn? Like, I think people don't buy her. I think people don't think it's authentic. I think that's what it is.
To me, Leah reads as someone who, at the beginning of the show, her currency was, I'm cooler than all these housewives. I'm better
than
you.
Like a Carol Radziwill.
Yeah, and I think that was fine for the first season she was on or whatever. But now it's like, okay, now you need to actually try and establish some sort of friendship or relationship, or else it's not going to work.
I agree. And here's my thing. Like, if you really want to be rich and famous and be on the Upper East Side and have this life, that's okay. Just admit it. I don't buy, you know, I'm downtown and I'm like this, but like, you're photographed at night on the Upper East Side with Tinsley. Like, I know that's your friend and everything, but like, I think it's like that people are calling bullshit, like that it's not authentic.
Interesting.
You know,
I personally think that there's this second season housewife phenomenon where there's always the glow up, except for Sutton. Sutton seems to be just like actually not participating in that, which is, I think, interesting. Oh my gosh. And you'll love, there's an amazing scene where we see Sutton's 18-year-old daughter on this new episode. And she's kind of juxtaposed against Lisa Rinna's daughters, because Sutton's daughter is like so pure. So she's like, a French and history double major. And she's like, just like extremely, I don't know. It's just like, she's so innocent compared to Lisa's daughters. And it's just hilarious. But anyway, this total tangent. I think that there's like this phenomenon where on the second season, these new housewives, they have this glow up and then they start to become quite contrived. And I actually think this started to happen to Carol Radziwill too. Like, she started to become extremely narcissistic. It was just like, you know, selfies 100% of the time, 24 hours a day on Instagram. And they just kind of lose the charm that they came in with because the, you know, you see the fame addiction really take root.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I'm starting to get nervous that that's going to happen with Wendy Osefo on Potomac.
We hate to bring this to you, but we are not Potomac watchers. Are we in trouble? Do we need to watch?
No, that's fine. I had a feeling because you were like, you paused and you didn't mention anything. But no, that is totally fine. But to that point, that is why, like, here's the thing. I'm not shocked with anything Ramona is saying or doing this season on New York. I'm shocked that Ramona is doing and saying these things in front of the cameras. And that is why I think everything has backfired on everybody, on Leah and everybody, because Ramona is authentic. She is herself. Mm-hmm. That is the great thing. Right. Ramona is like, I don't want to fucking talk about race. So whether you, I'm not arguing the points. I'm just saying, like, you, I would think, this is me, that Ramona would not, that she would think that and she would say that in the privacy of her own home to Avery. And when she's at Mar-a-Lago in Florida, I would, I am okay with, but I am shocked that Ramona is just like, I don't give a fuck if there's cameras. I don't want to talk about this. Yeah. I don't want to talk about race. Enough already. And, you know, this. And so Ramona is saying things not to be shocking. She's just honestly like, get out of my face. I don't want to talk about this.
Right.
So I'm shocked that she's being so open in front of the cameras. And you would think, because I think like they filmed this and Leah's like, oh, she's going down. Oh, my God. And like, yet the whole world is actually coming to Ramona's defense.
Well, I think there's just a lot of people that are feel like not necessarily have the same beliefs as Ramona, but that just don't want to. This isn't what they come to the Real Housewives of New York for. It's not for like, you know, PBS's conversation with the ACLU. Like, that's not really the content they're coming for.
Right.
And I, you know, another cancellation backfiring, I think, is Crystal to Sutton, because I think Crystal does think she's canceling Sutton by saying Sutton violated her. And it's another thing that viewers, are really seeing through and not buying.
That's the thing. Like, it's all gonna back. I mean, yes, yes and yes. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know. And I understand the other side of the argument, you know, with someone, you know, the other side of the argument, yes, is that people are going to say, like, you just take like an Ebony or like a Crystal, they're going to say like, well, then this is racist. Like, the fact that people don't want to hear about this on TV. I'm not taking a side one way or another, but I just think for ratings, Bravo have this like plan, and I don't think it's working, obviously, for ratings. So I don't know where you go from here. Like, as they cast Dallas now, and I don't know where you go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that they're going to sit by. Like, I think it's one thing that the OC had its worst season ever, but the ratings for the OC, the worst season in the history of Housewives, was way higher than New York and all this other stuff.
So I have a question for you, like, generally about Bravo or about Housewives. Do you, Lauren and I have sort of started to feel like Housewives are just not bringing it like they used to. You know, there's not really one season that's incredible, and let alone like, you know, multiple. I mean, there were times where both Orange County and Beverly Hills and New York were all so good. Is there a franchise that we're missing out on that's amazing? Or do you think just Housewives in general are just not as good right now?
Well, I think that I really think, and okay, I think Salt Lake is one of the best, and having nothing to do with Jen Shah, I think that's certainly going to help. But I think Salt Lake was like the gift that we all needed. And so I think in two things, like we are excited because it's a whole new show and it's like new people and it's really starting over.
Yeah.
But in a way, I think it almost ruined it now, because like, I think Housewives, if you think about it, it's on too much now, now that we have another city. Mm-hmm. I think that if you really think about it, it's all the same. Yes, there's different dramas with Erica and Salt Lake and all this, but like, it's all the same. It's the same type of women really doing nothing, and like different things happen. And then you compare it to like a Below Deck. Like Below Deck is really popular because like things happen. There's new, there's new charter guests, and it really is like life or death. You're at sea, and it's like, it's like a new show, a new crew, and like different. So it's like, and they're going to work. So I feel like if you really think about it, it's the same thing with Housewives. Like I think people are just, look, we've always had the real world, and the real world is gone. Like someday Survivor and American Idol and Housewives too will just be gone.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I just think it's like people are maybe getting just bored of the formula.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's the exactly. same.
Well, and every new cast member has probably seen it or knows what to do. And the audience is always smarter than you think. And they can see right through that.
They can see right through that.
I mean, that was Jen Shah in the first season.
That was Jen Shah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I liked Jen Shah.
Yeah, I liked Jen Shah for a minute. And then I was like, it's too much. Now, I had on my podcast, like when I had on like Meredith and I had on Lisa, they swear both that like that is Jen Shah. Because I'm like, I mean, I'm not convinced. And then, you know, it's like, that's my thing. Like, to me, Jen Shah was, like, acting, and it wasn't natural.
Yeah, I listened to that interview you did with Meredith, and Brooks was on too, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And I feel like they were extremely withholding. Like, it was like they were, like, just kind of giving the party line. Like, they were not – like, I didn't feel like they – I was kind of frustrated with them as in, you know – feeling for you as an interviewer, because I just kind of felt like they didn't really give any tea, in my opinion. It was like, oh no, like things are fine. Like we're just like, you know, things with Seth have never been better. And it was but just like no that's vulnerability at all.
That's her whole brand, well, though.
And like not for nothing. I mean, I love them dearly, but like, listen, I have a story about Heather and Terry when they were on my podcast. The day before I released their episode, there was an article like in Hollywood Life, and I read it and I was like, did they steal my audio? It was like the quotes. And mind you, my show still went viral and got worldwide press, way bigger than Hollywood Life because of everything Heather said. But it was like the quotes were the exact same quotes. So like, and I wasn't, but like, you know, like a Heather, Terry, Meredith, like there's just some guests that are so media trained, and you right. like know what you're gonna get. You just know what you're gonna get, you know,
right?
And I mean it's a lot of them, and it's like you just like it's almost like I knew that, like you just know certain guests are not gonna come and trash or just let it all hang out. They're just
that's true totally. If they're not gonna do it just, on the show, why are they gonna do it for a podcast?
Yeah, so it's like they were exactly what I expected. I mean, I was thrilled to have them, especially, you know, since Brooks was there too. And that was like, whatever, but yeah. But yeah. I mean, that was Jen Shah, but I just think it's like, it's too much Housewives. I really think people are burnt out, and it's not different anywhere. And like what really happens,
yeah.
you know,
the problem,
like if
yeah.
you think about it, like you have like a Luann or like a Teresa, like you have people that like, there were so many things happening in their lives, but that's such the rare exception. Like most of these people, the production goes to them in Dallas and Jersey and, you know, Potomac in Atlanta, and says like, what do you have going on in your life? And then they come up with your storyline, which is never really so interesting.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like yeah. what does anyone really have going on in their life?
Well,
we like just got lucky that Teresa got arrested and Luann fell in a bush and then she got arrested. And like there's certain right. housewives that really just brought it. But like who really does have all that going on in their lives? Not many.
It's true. It's true. If only we could go back to the days of Lori Peterson, you know, getting her son out of juvie. That was the golden era.
Right. Like that was the golden era. And I don't know if we ever could.
No, it's we can't.
It's like too, so I don't know, maybe, I don't know. Like, is it time to end certain franchises? I don't know.
Well, I think it's an existential threat to reality TV in general. It's because the contestants slash the stars or whatever, they know what they know what their job is. Their job is to be dramatic and get a second season and dress in a crazy way and get social media followers and become an influencer. And it's no longer like, oh, there's cameras here and they're filming our life and we don't know what this will be. And that was the magic. Like, that really was the magic of the first couple seasons of Beverly Hills and New York. And it's truly some of like the best, I think, television there that's ever been created.
I'm telling you, and like the best advice is, because I always say if I got on a reality show, I would be there for the long haul. Like, I would just know what to do. And like the key is to be authentic first and foremost above everything. Like, as simple as that sounds, nobody is. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at Bronwyn, who takes it to an extreme.
Yeah.
You just, like, it's a long road. It's a long road. Like, the fame is there if you think about it. Like, all you need to do is one season, and that's it, really. I mean, you have the fame after that, right? Like, it's not going away. So, you have to make it seem effortless, and you have to really be authentic and just let it all hang out. The minute you're contriving and like you don't want to be filmed a certain way, it's all going to fall apart.
Yeah.
Right. Well, David, this has honestly been so fabulous. Thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you, about your podcast? Give us all the details.
Yes. So it is a 5-day a week interview show with all of your favorite Bravo celebrities, reality TV stars, and pop culture icons. Again, it's not just reality. Lots of music, lots of TV. Always will be a heavy slant towards Bravo, just because that seems to be the world in which I live. And, you know, people that listen, I never said this, but the more I heard it, I was like, I get it. My interview style apparently is like I am, which I agree with this, like I am a wolf. I am a wolf in sheep's clothing. And, you know, we will start out nice and friendly, and it will be friendly. But like, listen, I don't back away. If there's tea to get, I will get the tea for you. And I like breaking the fourth wall. Like, I don't really care what I saw on the TV. I want to know like the real deal of what was going on when this happened and that happened, because I know how it works. So like, forget what I saw. Like, where was Bravo, you know, when this was happening? Where, you know, like, let's get right down into it. So I think that's why people like my show, because I will ask you the questions I need to ask. And it's Behind the Velvet Rope, which is, you could find it anywhere podcasts are found. And the best place on social media is Instagram at Behind Velvet Rope. There's no the in the title because Instagram hates long titles. So it's at Behind Velvet Rope. And the next time I come back, we need to talk about Sonia Morgan, because we made some statements and we never really got into it. But it sounds like your feelings on Sonia are same to mine.
I kept looking at the clock and being like, I need to release this man from our podcast, but I don't want to. So we would love to have you back to discuss more. Oh my gosh, there's just so much. You are a font of knowledge and, Bravo, just everything.
We will do it. I'll come back anytime you guys want, because you guys were fun and I could talk about this forever. And most people don't have an opinion on Sonia that is anything other than like how wonderful and fabulous she is. And I'm like, you know, I mean, also, let's not forget, I know her in real life, too. But also, like, is everyone watching the same show that I'm watching? Like, you know, so we have to talk about that next time for sure.
Okay, we will. Thank you so much for coming on. Truly, truly, truly.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. You guys are amazing. Keep in touch. And, you know, I will be back anytime you want.
Thank you.
Bye, you guys.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at PopApologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.